All right, welcome back, everyone. I thought there was going to be a few more commercials, but somebody must have cut that a little short or something. But thanks for that. I'm continuing on. This is Cancel the Cabal with Stephen Roberts on Sunday's Revolution Radio. One of the commercials that plays during the breaks is the plug for the donate button. I'm not sure where the donations are at, but we need to meet a certain amount every single month to keep the station going. So please go hit that donate button if you haven't done it yet, or even if you have, do it again if you are able to. I'm continuing on here with another hour. I had somebody get a hold of me and asked if they could come on. He's been on Revolution Radio 3 or 4 times now, and I brought him back. I have military analyst and military Iraqi WMD's whistleblower, Greg Ford, on the show previously. So I'm bringing Greg back up on the show. Welcome back, Greg.
Yes, thanks, Steve. Yeah, it seems that as long as we've got these issues of government misbehavior and malfeasance, that I will never be lonely and never have or never be at a loss for something to do. Okay, like talk on your show. So
right.
Oh, and by the way, thanks for bringing up that donate button. Yeah, I wanted to let everybody know too that I have my donate button out there and it is working. And, you know, to give everybody an update of where I'm at with my case.
How does somebody find that donate button, Greg?
Just go to my site on Facebook, okay, you know, Frank Gregory Ford, and they will see, you know, my site, very nice site, by the way, you know, me looking fit and trim in my camouflage in the Middle East. And there's a big, great big gold donate button, all right? Hit that thing, okay? And make a donation because I don't see, you know, it's not exactly like you're paying for my vacation fund this year. You're paying for my attorneys to fight the remnants of the Bush administration's war crimes issues. And I've just been informed that now not is my case going to the Ninth Circuit Court, okay, where it has been residing, but I've been informed by several judges now, after reviewing my case, that my case needs to be moved, forget the Supreme Court, my case needs to be moved to the Congress of the United States for a review, all right? Because the Congress can only make new laws as pertain to a case like mine, and mine is the very first case of its kind in the history of the United States, all right? So, and that, you know, that's not free, folks. That takes money, and like I say, I'm fighting the notorious, infamous U.S. Attorney's Office, all right, which are busy right now, not with me so much, but they're busy helping to justify legally and engineer the a coup that's taking place, and I'll be glad to tell the listeners about that. If you think so, if you think it's a good time for it, Steve, what do you think?
Well, yeah, you can do that, or you can also remind us a little bit about your case, what the case actually is.
Okay, well, like I said, I don't want to remind, you know, your hardcore listeners because they know the story ad nauseum, but it was where I was getting ready to retire. I had been sent to Iraq. That was my last assignment, and of course, my unit, it's a military intelligence unit, and we were in charge of all the counterintelligence operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we were also in charge of interrogation, you know, the bad old I word, all right, interrogation. And of course, now that seems to be all that's on everybody's mind is interrogation. The 2,000-page report that Congress just spent 8 years compiling, investigating the military intelligence and the CIA's intelligence/torture issues, is supposed to be released, although our President Obama doesn't want it released, and it virtually indicts all the physicians, nurses, psychologists that were at Abu Ghraib prison, all right? So that is pending right now, and then, of course, Here's what I was called about earlier today, Steve, and when I asked to be on your show, is this issue, is the Feinstein, Senator Feinstein investigation of all that torture and abuse that, according to my commanding officer, never happened and then I imagined, okay? That's why I was renditioned, all right? are renditioned, tortured, and shipped out of the country on a stretcher, strapped down on a stretcher. So needless to say, Senator Feinstein, who was the first to receive my warnings and reports about the torture at Abu Ghraib prison and being done by military intelligence and the agency, all right, she is investigating, and it's a full-blown investigation. And, of course, everybody knows by now that she's finding things that are just blood-curdling and hair-raising, all right? Well, the armed forces and the agency being what they are, of course, they can't sit still while they have to answer questions to their oversight committee, the committee that's supposed to control their actions. Can't have that, can we? All right? It appears now that the general, okay, has Michael Hayden. He was the general. He has a dubious honor of having been in charge of the OIC, in charge of NSA, and also the CIA, okay? And the irony is he's back in uniform. Now, I'm kind of suspicious about that, but since he was supposed to have dropped his uniform and retired from the military when he went into command civilian organizations, and especially intelligence agencies, But as I said on your show last time, that the NSA is accommodating spying and espionage on virtually everyone in the United States, and probably most of the people overseas that speak on any kind of electronic medium, all right? That's phones, emails, landlines, radios, okay? It's all collected, folks.
So what's that program called again? Something 25 or...?
I'm sorry, which program?
You said there was a program name or a number or something like that. You had a name for it.
Right. Actually, that's not the name of the program. You're speaking about the Push-Talk P25.
Yes, that's what it was.
And one of the things that I've learned in doing intelligence work for 30 years, three decades, is something like this, is that, you know, it's great if you go out and you meet somebody at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're wearing your trench coat and your fedora, and you hand off intelligence, but it doesn't do any good if they hand off the intelligence to you. You have to transfer that intelligence, that information, to people who can use it. And that means analysts, that means directors, that means interface between the people that go out and shoot people and or move military machines around and or command new collection of intelligence. Your intelligence has to get to these people. And the great medium for all of this now, and I wasn't sure quite, yes, Steve?
Yes, I'm here. Steve? I'm here.
Okay, yeah, sorry. I'm expecting more attacks like I used to get on your show.
Okay.
And so, needless to say, I did not know what the vehicle was for getting this information that NSA is collecting on everybody hearing my voice right now, everybody speaking on their cell phones, everywhere in the world, okay, including presidents of other countries, dictators of other countries, anybody you want to care to imagine. Mick Jagger now has his cell phone monitored day in and day out, all right? So, needless to say, everybody gets their issue. I mean, the NSA is a non-discriminatory spying machine, all right? Everybody gets spied on, okay?
Hey, Craig.
And so, yes.
You know what? It's also come out that in the last week that the CIA has been spying on the FBI.
Yes, I broke that on your show last time.
Yes, you did.
Funny thing, isn't it? Now, the CIA, okay, obviously doesn't pay any attention to anybody in its operations. They've had no problems eliminating heads of state. You know, I mean, just go back to Dallas in 1953 and see what they did there. See their operation, in place there. All right. And they've had no problems, maintaining any kind of program they want, especially revenue generating programs like Copper Green. All right. I've warned your listeners about Copper Green and what's going on now. And black sites around the world, black operation sites. I've warned everybody about those. Okay. And yes, it is going on. A big chunk of the photojournalists, and investigative journalists now have either been threatened or killed, that have actually exposed the CIA's operations. All right. The CIA was with me in Building 1A, in my military unit, in an Abu Ghraib prison. Okay, not to hear them tell it now. Okay, they didn't know what was going on. Gee, you know, these are the same people that thought waterboarding was a no-brainer, right? So, anyway, now we have a full-blown investigation, and surprise, Senator Feinstein finds out that not only is she being spied on, the FBI is being spied on, who has to investigate all these issues, and also her staff is being spied on. The House Committee on Intelligence and Collection is being spied on. I mean, what do we have here? We have clearly a coup. Yeah, you don't collect this information for no reason, okay? Gee, so you can protect us against bad old terrorists and Al-Qaeda out there, all right, as the village idiot George Bush would have us believe, okay? You don't collect this information for that reason, all right? George Bush authorized all of this, folks. You know, why do you think he attacked the FISA process, all right? And President Obama has accelerated the program, strengthened the program, so you can be spied on, okay? So, anyway, as of today, I was informed, yes, there is a coup, all right? You know, and I don't mean C-U-P, I don't mean C-O-O-P, I don't mean just coup de grace. No, I mean this, quite literally and simply, there is a coup in process, C-O-U-P, a political coup, all right? The reason why Senator Feinstein is being attacked is because, and she is being, you know, the attack is being directed against her by, and I'll even give you the name of the guy who's doing it, all right? Jeff Sessions, all right? Jeff Sessions is leading the coup. Jeff Sessions, it appears, was on the same committee as Feinstein at one time, but now he is the agency's man, and he is directing an in-house coup to make sure that all this information, you know, is directed to remove her, all right?
Certainly, yeah. He was a congressman, wasn't he?
Yep, you got it, right. And further,
Is he a lobbyist now, Greg?
I'm sorry?
Is he a lobbyist now or something?
I don't think, well, no, he's a thug for the agency.
Okay.
All right. That's, you know, he is the agency's point man leading this attack. All right. And he has got the full endorsement of the agency, of the NSA, and the CIA behind him. All right.
So
the Oversight Committee. All right.
And why do they want to
bring the Oversight Committee and you remove any revelations about any kind of revenue generating behavior?
Okay. Okay. Right. Yeah, you just answered my question right there. Why do they want to get rid of Feinstein and the Oversight Committee? So you just answered it.
Mm-hmm. You bet. That's exactly why. Okay. You know, one of the things, I worked in a prison for 20 years, and I can associate, you know, our politicians with inmates, okay, in a prison. I worked in the notorious Folsom Prison, all right, for 20 years. You know, Johnny Cash's Folsom Prison.
Folsom Prison Blues, yeah.
Right, exactly, right. And by the way, when I worked there, I never did hear Folsom Prison Blues being sung, okay?
No?
Not one time, all right?
No?
I really had a disappointment. I had a two-decade disappointment, all right? Now, one thing I've learned, though, is how close, you know, like, say, convicts and criminals are to politicians. And one of the things that was very apparent early on is that if you give something to them, you have to move heaven and earth to get it back, all right? And that's what I saw, that the greatest danger I saw was George W. Bush, okay, launching his phony terrorist attack on America, and your listeners know why I think that, all right, pre-planned aggression against the United States of America with a false flag operation.
Sure.
All right. Well, anybody want to contest that? Call me.
Yeah, really. Say, Greg, let's get back into Dianne Feinstein a little bit. You're really intriguing me. Let's get into the implications of doing away with the Oversight Committee and Dianne Feinstein, for lack of a better word, you know, the Wicked Witch of the West. What would it mean? My first guest, actually, Greg, I should tell you that the Oversight Committee, aren't they investigating the $8 trillion that's missing from the Pentagon budget?
Oh, gosh, they're finally getting around to investigating that now?
I think
so. It's been missing for a long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. And when it came up missing, there was all kinds of chest thumping and podium pounding going on. We've got to find that. And the strangest thing, the weekend came, and all these senators and congressmen that were outraged, okay, over how this amount of money, at the time it was $7 trillion, by the way. Of course, you know, it's the American way to add interest rates, of course, to missing money. All right. Now, how that could all go missing now with $8 trillion, man. Well, funny thing, okay, is Monday, the sun rose on Washington, D.C. on Monday, and all those chest bumpers, oh my goodness, what a brow-beaten, cowardly, tail-between-the-legs looking bunch they were, all right. Something had happened over that weekend, you know, to clamp down on these indignant politicians, all right, wanting to know where $8 trillion disappeared to. That's a big chunk of our GNP, all right. And it's funny, not another word was said. Now, I can tell you, all right, where a large part of that went, all right? But, you know, but who am I? I'm just a former humble civil servant, all right?
Did that go into the black budget?
Pardon me?
Did that go into the black budget?
Oh, yes. But, well, no, I mean, even the Cocaine Importation Agency can't come up and spend money that fast. Okay?
Yeah.
No, that was, remember Bocce Bank?
Certainly.
Okay. All right. Well, Bocce Bank has a lot to do with it. All right. Bank of Commerce Credit International. Okay. Those folks directed that big chunk of change to disappear. And it was used, all right. Now, you won't see this anywhere else, but I can tell you, okay, since I'm just a guest, right, a humble guest who doesn't really know much of anything, all right, that money went to prop up the Bank of Canada, several banks in Europe, all right, it went to basically be a relief fund for Greece, and there was a couple of banks in, the Far East that were shaky.
Well,
and
I wonder,
and also, yeah, that's where it went then.
Yeah, Greg, I wonder why they just didn't ask for bank bailouts like all of the rest of the European banks did. You know, they got up on TV and cried because they couldn't make their $10 billion bonuses, and the people just shoveled their money to them. I wonder why they just didn't.
Yeah, I was deeply upset about, you know, these bank presidents not being able to, you know, get the bonuses and being outraged. They were outraged.
I was too, yeah.
That their bonuses were being paid with federal taxpayer money.
Yeah.
Taxpayer money, as in U.S. citizen taxpayer money.
Yeah.
Okay. I was deeply upset for them too. All right. But here is the deal. And I can explain this with three little letters. Okay. Hopefully your listeners have the volume turned up. Since, like I said, I'm just an average guy and a humble citizen trying to get the point across of it. Okay, AIG. All right. Does that ring a bell with anybody? AIG.
Yes, it does.
Right. You bet. All right. Where else? And AIG. It was like, you know, for me, it's like sitting in the stands of a racetrack, you know, watching your race horses, you know, being loaded up, you know, into the chutes, and watching the gates pop open. Well, the first whistle. Okay. You know, the bell to launch that race, okay, for, you know, the feeding trough, the public feeding trough of money, okay, which 9/11 had put into place, by the way. 9/11 was intended and intentional to do exactly this kind of stuff, all right? AIG, all right, the chairman and CEO on a Wednesday of 1 week made the announcement, oh, we are going to be bankrupt if we don't have $126 billion from the government by Tuesday. Okay. $126 billion by Tuesday. Okay. You know, what kind of gravy train is that? All right. Well, surprise. Okay. That was the first horse out of the gate. All right. And you know what happened? Remember what happened, Steve? They have their $126 billion. Have you heard another word about AIG other than the fact that they were indignant and calling the people that were demanding an explanation for why they got a bonus? They were referring to them as a lynch mob.
Yeah, okay. Well, they haven't. No, I haven't heard from them since, but that doesn't mean that they're not planning on crying for more.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, that was AIG, and that's what was happening is the media barely covered it. All right, and then after a week, hardly anybody said anything about it. But the thing was then remember Henry Pauling? You know, he was the Secretary of Treasury.
Sure.
Yes. You know, severe looking guy.
Yeah.
You know, real ominous. You know, I mean. He looked like Judge Rehnquist, you know.
Hank Paulson.
Would you ask, the Supreme Court.
Hank right? Paulson,
you remember
mean,
right? Judge Rehnquist?
Yeah. Sure.
Paulson, right. Yes. He gets up there and this ominous glare at the reporters and the cameras. He says, they will have this money and there will be no internal auditing of the money, of this process. Say what? And not one hand went up. No, it's not one hand went up and said, excuse me, that's illegal. This is called public robbery of the U.S. citizens of the United States. This is what this is called. Not one hand went up and said that or asked that. Okay.
Well.
And right. Okay. That was the starting bell.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're dealing with a criminal cabal, certain words and phrases are taken as threats to many of the people over there at the, in the district of criminals.
Yeah, the TOC, huh? Okay.
Yeah, TOC.
Well, here's Steve. Okay, now, if you can get, a truthful statement from any of these media agencies about when this $7 trillion went missing, and, of course, all these politicians that had their peepees whacked properly, okay, over the weekend, all right? Well, yes, you'll find that it was within, 2 months, 3 months, when it was annotated, in the congressional record that, yes, that money was missing, okay? Yes, that's what you'll find, and that's the same money that they're now investigating. But it's minus $1 trillion, okay? They say $7 trillion. It's more like $8 trillion now, okay? That's actually missing. So that's all I have, like I say, that's all I have on that, if you're really wondering. I mean, according to the politicians, when they're dealing with somebody else's money, who cares about $1 trillion? Who cares about $1 billion? Have you heard a politician say anything that was under $1 billion on any kind of program? I haven't.
I sure haven't either, no.
$1 million, hell, that's gone the way of the copper penny.
Say, Greg.
Okay. Yes.
There was a few key words that I hadn't heard since my senior year in algebra in high school before this President Obama took office, and those words were trillions and quadrillions. So they are just talking about, trillions like spending cash, and quadrillions is actually going to be the word that's going to be more used here in the coming years.
Mm-hmm. Well, they'll start throwing Google around too.
Yes.
So Okay. Okay. Well, that's all I have on that is what happened to all that money. And I have, like I say, I can't remember all the banks. There was about 8 banks that money was shipped off to. Yeah. One of those deals like with the Green Zone in Iraq, where pallets of money are being flown in the middle of the night kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, it was one of those deals.
I wonder if they're going to have to pay any interest on that money that they got loaned, or whether it's going to be interest free.
Good question, Steve. I'm glad you asked that. Okay, and like I say, when you think of politicians in Washington, just remember the inmates and convicts in prison. Okay, you can give them something. Okay, but better be prepared for a real battle to get it back. When you pay your income tax to the IRS, a lot of people can relate to this. And all of a sudden, somehow, it's been shown that you've overpaid your taxes. The government doesn't like you using that term. They don't mind using it when they want to hold you up for money. Okay, but overpayment. Okay, but But in this case, try to get money back from the IRS that you've overpaid. Good luck, anybody out there. Good luck.
I say, Greg.
Okay. Like the tea party. Okay.
Yeah. I say, Greg.
Yes.
I got a little story to tell you. I mean, things must have changed, but from 1994 until 2000, I had one job where I actually did overpay my taxes by quite a few, or by like $50 every single week out of my check. And I would get in anywhere between $3,300 and $3,500 back on my on my tax returns. But like I said, that was, you know, between 20 and 15 years ago. So things must have drastically changed.
Okay. By the way, did you hear my dogs barking just now?
Yes, I did. I did hear DHS in the background there.
Oh, okay. I couldn't tell if your folks had picked that up. But that just adds another question to things, and I'm going to ask this in a second. Who let the dogs out? Okay.
Yeah, roof.
And this applies, exactly. And this applies to the CIA and the NSA and our politicians. All right. That's who let the dogs out. This stuff happened in 9/11. You can go back to all of this stuff. Runaway banks, runaway politicians, runaway intelligence agencies. That was the coup that they were waiting for. 9/11. All right. There was no, and as I've told your listeners, hey, you know, Colonel Schaefer briefed my counterintelligence group, saying, yes, this would happen, all right, if we would have this terrorist strike, and it would change the complete makeup, the complete face of America, okay, from that point on, all right? That's what he said, and just so, you know, and as you well know, I'm not just making this up like a bunch of gobbledygook. No, didn't I read, for your listeners, didn't I read the congressional record of what Colonel Schaefer said, what, 2 weeks ago? Steve, didn't I read that? Are you there, Steve? Can you hear me, Steve? Okay, well, call me back, Steve, because obviously we're having an attack here.
All right, hang on, everyone. I'm going to get Greg back. Not sure what happened there. Okay. Hi, Greg.
Yeah, Steve.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, okay. We're still on the air?
Yes, we are, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, when I came back from Iraq, I'd be talking to somebody, and my phone would do exactly what yours did just now, okay? Yeah, I'd be talking away, and just gradually the volume would just go down and diminish to nothing, and they wouldn't be there anymore. And about half the time, there would be a representative from the intelligence community, you know, speaking to me. Okay, but that was exactly what I expected just now. Okay, the volume went down, and you just disappeared. It still showed that my system showed that the signal was still going out to you, but there was simply nobody there. So anyway, I think that was a response to your show today.
Okay.
To be quite honest. So anyway, I need to get something out here. Okay, before they clamp down again. Okay, Seaside, Florida. Okay, write that name down. Seaside, Florida. I want to know if anybody knows anything about Seaside, Florida. Okay, I think it would be really interesting, you know, for some information to get out about Seaside, Florida. It appears that the contractors who built Seaside, Florida were very dubious contractors. The place seems to have been built overnight, and it seems to have been built with something in mind, okay, as in a training ground for some very bad CIA activities.
What is,
right?
Hey, Greg?
Yes.
What is the alleged reason for it being built?
Oh, you know, what place in Florida is built without being a, you know, a planned retirement community, okay?
Ah, okay.
Everything in Florida is a planned retirement community, all right? So, and I'm sure it's the same thing with this, okay? Ostensibly it was that, all right? But but according to, you know, this panicky call I received this morning, Seaside, Florida, and a place in Alabama called Enterprise, all right? Those seem to be ground zero for some very bad behavior from some very bad people, okay? And these places bear investigation, especially by Dianne Feinstein, Senator Feinstein. Okay, I'm sure there's lots of things to be found, which happened again. What was it? 5 weeks ago or 6 weeks ago, when they found all those bodies buried in northern Florida, you know, young, right.
The White House boys.
Yes. Yes. Well, this is very comparable, okay? And the way I understand it, and I, this was only alluded to in the conversation because I didn't want too much said over an open line. I mean, you know, I mean the NSA, let's face it, you know, they've got everything anyway. But it appears that that's where these political compromising situations such as pedophilia are, this is, these are the training grounds, okay, and this is the organization of such a thing. And with that in mind, these places need to be investigated thoroughly. Who funds these two towns? Okay, where's the main source of income, revenue, and what was there any connection to any type of covert clandestine operations?
Say, Greg. Greg.
Yes.
I had a guest on just not too long ago. That was actually. I had two guests on. They were survivors of that boys' camp that they found all them boys in, those 55 or 60-plus boys that they've been finding now. They said that that town was run by the Klan.
Mm-hmm. Now, what town was that? What was it? Where the boys home, but
yeah.
But I'm the fellow who was running
Dozier.
The place was...
Dozier, Florida.
Dozier, yeah. Right. Now, if I remember correctly, and I don't recall his name, the fellow who was actually organized that home and started and ran that home and all the bad things that went on in it, he actually was the head, he formed and founded the largest, was it the largest law firm, I think, the largest law firm in Florida? I think it was Florida, yeah. And, you know, I don't recall his name right now, but I believe that same person who founded the Dozier, Florida facility. And it's legendary to this day, you know, all the bad things that went on there. And I would have loved to have heard your show. I didn't know that that's who you were going to have as guest. I would have, tuned in. But I'm sure if you look at how that place was run and all the other issues that were spinoffs from that place, to the South American operations, in Argentina, run by ex-Nazis, okay, where they were training young boys to be basically prostitutes and to be manipulated into doing all kinds of other bad political issues, compromising, foreign heads of state and so forth. I believe that's what we have, that was happening in Enterprise, Florida, Enterprise, Alabama, and Seaside, Florida. That's the way I'm being given this information. And a couple of non-profit, the front agencies for these groups are a couple of non-profit organizations, which, if you think it's easy to get a non-profit in your tax status now, go try it. I dare any of your listeners to go try it and get it set up a non-profit organization. Okay, you can't. That's almost impossible. So you have to have all these groups out being front companies for an operation like this. And they're always non-profit. Non-profit always gets everybody kind of weepy, too. That's another thing. They're just doing this for the betterment of mankind, right? Okay. And the irony is, and I'm not going to put out any names, but I was given some names of religious groups that were in connection to these non-profit organizations that are recruiting fronts for these organizations, all right? So they are in operation today, and they've been in operation for quite a while, but they are religious fronts of religious groups that are masquerading under the nonprofit organization banner. And that's what they do, is they recruit young, especially young boys. That's the bugaboo. Yeah, everybody's all upset always, about little girls being molested. Well, nobody seems to mind about little boys being molested and hurt and murdered, okay?
No,
so
they
that's
don't.
That's what we have here.
No, they
mm-hmm.
don't.
No, that's the issue here. So,
say, Greg?
I was informed that the U.S. Attorney's Office is, U.S. Attorney's Office, AT&T, and Westinghouse are, basic henchmen, providing henchmen services for this operation. So,
say, Greg?
Yes.
I've got somebody that wants in on the conversation. He's a survivor, one of them Dozier boys.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, hopefully, hopefully, he won't call me an imbecile and a fool
no.
and a half.
No.
Up, okay. Yeah, sure. What's his name, Steve, by the way?
Do you want to say your name there, caller?
Of course. I'm Billy Hayes.
Oh, yeah. It's Billy Hayes.
Billy Hayes? Yeah.
Yep.
Is that like the fellow that does, does all the high power sales pitches on TV?
No. That's,
that's
Billy Mays.
Billy Mays.
Billy Mays. Oh, okay. That wasn't the same guy that opened up an overhead carry-all on an airplane. Oh, okay.
No.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah, and had a bag falling his head or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? Oh,
so okay. What's going on, Billy?
Okay. Well, I want to make mention. I was in attendance to Dozier School back in the summer of 1962, and I'm one of the people who pressed for investigation to have an investigation open on that school due to the fact of things that happened to us in 62 in reference to forcing us to dig holes at night when we got in trouble within the school. They made us go out at night and dig holes where the gardens would be, and then made us lay in them until daybreak. And, of course, we heard stories, of what this was for. And of course, it scared the heck out of us. And of course, and the story went that you dig your own grave and then they'll bury you. But so far, only all the bodies recovered from the two small areas that they've ran tests on were near the school. And that the bodies they found so far were from 1918 through 1952. There are other bodies out there we know of. That they haven't, they're on private owned areas now. And there's a breachment. The state has been fighting this all these years. I mean, we filed for investigation back in the 70s to have an investigation open up on this place. And it's been a fight for going on 30 years now.
So they've just more or less given up the 50 plus boys that have been found, and they're more or less hiding, what, maybe hundreds and hundreds more?
Hundreds and hundreds of more. We're talking about, there's areas out there that turned into vineyards. There's areas out there turned into parts of Eglin Air Force Base as part of the air proving grounds there. This is near Mariana, Florida, between Mariana and Dukuniak Springs, Florida. And it is not Dozier City. It's called the Dozier School of Boys, or sometimes respectfully called the White House Boys.
Dozier, Florida. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I was alluding to, Greg.
And if it wouldn't have been for a gentleman by the name of Orris B. Kinney, who was my principal, who got me out of that situation and took me into the Niceville High School as a student and gave me the protection within, I would not be here today because I would have been left in one of those holes some night.
It certainly sounds like it, Bill. I mean, and very clearly, this is one of the darkest secrets going on in our history. Now, one of the things that fascinates me is, not you and several other brave souls have been trying to get an investigation into this situation, and. And I heard about this the first time, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, all right? How did that happen? How did they find those bodies initially? Was it 57 bodies? And who was responsible for that investigation, the follow-on investigation? I mean, it's not often you find a mass grave, especially in America, and it just kind of disappears from the media.
Hey, Billy. Wasn't it the White House boys that were responsible for bringing that to light?
I'm sorry, I didn't copy that. Say again.
I said, wasn't it the White House boys that were responsible for bringing them bringing that investigation up?
No. The White House boys are the ones who will never talk again. They're the ones that disappeared. But it's the families of those boys that for the last 18 years, we've been in search of family members of those bodies that have been found so far.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to understand, these kids came from mostly from South Florida, from very low-profile families. Those who have survived living at Dozier School, the majority of those boys became part of what is known as the company. They were indoctrinated, and many of them became part of the MK Ultra movement.
MK Ultra. You would have to bring up MK Ultra. Now, Bill, tell me more, because I don't know how many times every month somebody comes to me and says, you know about MK Ultra, all right? And I have heard nothing. You know, I've read all the government blop, okay, about MK Ultra, how it was shut down, and it was just basically a tool by the CIA to screen Soviet defectors and so forth. I don't think it was shut down when the government says it was, and I think it just, knowing bureaucratic language like I do, I think it was just metamorphosed into another program, okay, and they just called it another program, and then just redlined the budget. That's what I think happened. But where and how did you, Bill, come across the connection between the White House boys and MK Ultra? You remember where that was and how you heard that?
Our system was indoctrination by brainwashing, I guess you might call it, through the personnel of the school that I was attending. Afterwards, after I was pulled out of Dozier, I was put into a combined military public school. And from that point, I was transferred every other month from that school to Langley School, to Quantico School, and back to another school. And in the end, like my senior year, I wound up graduating from two separate schools with two separate sheepskins, which is, that just signifies what the unusual life was. I remember falling asleep in school several times and waking up at Langley.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's muddied areas of memory throughout. And it hasn't been until recently that I was able, over the last 10, 15 years, that I started to remember some things that were happened to me, including I knew this young lady that I was in Pensacola that she became pregnant and had a baby. We never got to see the baby, and that baby disappeared from her possession also. And her name was Kathy O'Brien.
O'Brien isn't that one of the victims that has famously come out?
That's it.
Okay.
I don't know that name, but no, most programs and indoctrination programs, I mean, even programs like the Manchurian Candidate programs, which I do believe exist, there's no question about that, and like this program, okay, that you were subjected to and a prisoner of, now they are training you and educating you to do something, all right? And as you say, you've gone through basically three schools here with the four schools with this program.
Five.
Now, what was it that they wanted you to do, Bill? I mean, did they want you to be the ultimate bureaucrat for the government, or a soldier, or they want you to be I spoke to one person who said that he kept having his memories of killing people. All right.
Well,
and then when he finally did get his memories back, they were solid, sound, detailed memories. Okay, but what was the premise of moving you, to these institutions as if they were training you to do something and developing you? What do you remember what the purpose was?
I was trained in acute electronics, and I became part of the construction of the HARP system and part of the Agent Orange training sessions down at Eglin Air Force Base. Somehow I wound up at Ruby Ridge doing surveillance, electronic surveillance. Somehow I wound up at Waco, Texas, doing electronic surveillance and putting up several towers at Waco for that incident. I was indoctrinated into constructing a video surveillance system around Oklahoma City prior to April 19th there. And it just so happens my birthday is on April 19th.
Say, Billy, Greg?
Yes.
We're getting ready for the break. You want to continue on with this after the break?
Too far. Go ahead. I'll be here for a while.
Greg, maybe about 30 minutes?
I'm enjoying this immensely.
Okay.
And I'm making lots of notes, thanks to Bill here. So,
okay.
So, no, I'd love to continue. if that's all right.
Yeah, maybe just about 30 minutes, and that's about all I can do after this. But, yeah, it's very interesting stuff, Billy. I've heard of people that have been you, you know, and they've remembered their somehow retained some of their memories or gotten them back somehow. It's very interesting. Yeah, you want to take us out to the break here? Or?
Sure, go ahead.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah, we should be hearing the music here. I think there's going to be music for a break. Sometimes there are, most of the time there is, but sometimes there isn't.
Right. Well, yeah, we'll check with NSA first.
NSA? Okay. Yeah. No, I just got to check with Studio A, that's all.
Well, this I can say is everybody that I knew of back from those days were so compartmentalized that we did not have an understanding of what a civilian life actually was. We lived on a military base. We lived with a military family who was also totally engaged into the company. And as things pursued, I've lost my whole family. My whole family has disappeared and have been affiliated with tragic, unexplained deaths. My brothers, my sisters, even my wife, who died this last year, died suspiciously.
Well, we're sorry to hear that, Billy. It looks as though we might not have a break, so we'll just go ahead and continue.
I'm going to yell at my son to give him some. Go ahead, carry on.
Okay. Yeah, Greg, can you make comments on what you're hearing? Or?
It's really fascinating because, you know, things, I think Bill said acute electronics. Is that what your education was in? Is that what you were trained to do? Did you say acute electronics? You know, sensitive electronics?
I think, yeah, I think he might be getting something to drink, but I thought that's what he said. Well, wait till he gets back here.
Because, you know, issues like the heart program, you know, as involved as I've been in the system, I've only heard, at extreme distances. Okay, I mean, I even knew more about copper green, and Q-bark than I did, about something called HARP. And then I had heard that HARP was, alive and well in place and actually functioning, and was largely responsible for the tsunami and earthquake in Japan as a political retribution issue. And so I would love to hear more about the HARP program if he has the memories of such. Agent Orange, that was a different program that didn't have anything to do with, of course, electronics, but
contraire. All when Agent Orange came out, there was discoveries made about the turbulent reaction to Agent Orange while it was airborne at high altitude, which subjected the C-6, a site at just south of Dozier School at Diffuse Air Springs. C-6 was a paraphased super radar system that had the capability, mm-hmm. and it was one of the highest output radars in the world. And when they fired it during an Agent Orange spraying it out in the Gulf, they found mm-hmm. it did some weird things to the weather fronts that were moving in. It also, they found out that they could totally light up the sky, turn the whole Gulf into daylight in the middle of night. So there was electronic reference of what the HARP capabilities would be from reactions that started with in 1962 at the C-6 site on Eglin Air Force Base.
Say, Billy,
go ahead.
Greg asked a question that a couple minutes ago. I think you might have been off getting something to drink or something, but he asked a question and you missed it. You want to ask him again, Greg?
Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, I thought you said acute electronics. Is that what you said?
Yes, acute electronics. Electronics not very well known to most people, such as electronic countermeasures, HARP reductions, specialized surveillance, which turned into now we call it night vision or flare. I was into those things back in early days.
Because when I first started out in the intelligence business, I was electronic warfare, in terms of intelligence. Election
right.
and so forth.
Right.
And pretty much everything that we looked at before we actually went out into the field was in a vault. Okay, they pulled out everything in and said, okay, here's what we got, the latest and greatest. Now, and like I said, there was only hints at the HARP system, okay, yet that we did have something connection with Agent Orange as being some sort of, catcher's mitt recipient of radar, okay, of multi-phase, I assume it's multi-phase radar, transmission to this Agent Orange. And you say that actually causes some sort of weather manipulation or weather front?
That's what they found. Yeah, that's what they found in 1963.
My goodness, they've kept that quiet, haven't they? Goodness. Okay, no wonder. I'm sorry.
It wasn't very quiet from where we were. I mean, we were constantly being tested and sprayed upon by Agent Orange at Eglin Air Force Base. The Cape Park housing area there was frequent by dumping Agent Orange on what they call Bent's Lake area, which was a Boy Scout camp that was so overgrown with foliage, and it was worse than Vietnam. But I worked ECM, electronic countermeasures.
Right.
And so if you were working EW, you know what I was doing.
Well, yes. ECCM, yes, sure, certainly. For a while, I was actually back in Boston going to school, and I had a roommate who was a specialist in electronic counter surveillance measures of listening devices. All right, but, like bugs, like you see in the movies, James Bond movies and so forth, bugs being placed in phones, bugs being placed, odd enough, in concrete walls, okay, support stanchions, you can actually take two pieces of metal and throw them together and turn that into a listening device. Well,
right.
My roommate was doing that, and I realized how much more there was to that field, and it was actually a three-phase training program. Where he would go to school, and then he'd go to the field for 2 years, and he would be in all these diplomatic missions and so forth, and he would do things like sweep embassies, or sweep them, like a NATO site, or assault two, or assault one meeting site, and then he'd come back, go to school, and get brought up on what was the latest and greatest, things like intercepting signals off of the moon, bouncing signals off the moon and intercepting those. I didn't know that, that most of our radio transmissions actually go to the moon. They hit the moon and can be received, back, okay? You can actually intercept them back on the way, returning to it. So I did understand that, yes, there were some exceptional programs out there that formed the basis of NSA. When you talk about the monster that NSA is today, that's where they came from. And it came from people like you doing the research and my former roommate doing the research. So, yes, no, but these are very carefully kept. I noticed they're very carefully kept from the public, and any knowledge, is kept from the public. And it's critical now that, yes, these systems do come out, all right? But forget national security. We've got a government now that has turned itself into an aggressor against the American people. That's what I say. And your program at in Dozier, that's what it looked like, with a training ground, like a test bed, so to speak, for certain types of programs like this. Okay.
Exactly. That's what Eglin was. It was the proving ground of all these electronics, anything associated with the Air Force surveillance systems, strategic photography, or radar systems, or avionics systems. It was a specialized testing ground. So they have a hangar there that they can duplicate 80 below zero on an aircraft or on equipment. Electronic equipment. See if they will withstand working at 180 degrees to minus 80 degrees in a hangar. I mean, we'd set up lasers in there to see if we could infract different reflections as we were doing training for. We devised a system of shooting a laser at a small metal reflective dot that could be placed on a piece of glass. And that reflection off from that dot would hit a detector, and you could get any audio that was beyond inside that window was transmitted back and could be turned back into audio and reduplicate whatever was going on beyond that window. or in that room.
So in other words, listening to returning transmissions from the moon is not that far out. It's not Buck Rogers stuff, is it?
That was just one of the tests that came out. NASA was really into big time.
Really? Well, I actually feel better now that I know that at least I was thinking in the right vein. Now, and you're just the person to ask, and I'm, and if you don't mind indulging me, Bill, and your listeners, is, and you can probably give me a little, insider information on this, all right, is when I was in Iraq, I had two episodes that I've never had explained to me before, okay, and everybody seems to be rather frightened about elaborating on what I saw, okay. Now, the first one, okay, I just come to a village. We were on a patrol, and we come to this little village out just off the Tigris River, and it had a grape vineyard, huge grape vineyard, hundreds of acres, and so the village itself was ancient, okay, mud brick, of course, and so we came down the road, and there was barely enough room for the Humvee to move between these mud brick walls, and it came around a corner, and one of the walls stopped, and there was a turned around, and it's one of the incongruities of warfare, is we turned around, and I looked, and there was a MiG-29 parked, okay, right next to the mud brick wall, fully armed. I mean, SRAMs, SRAMs, SAMs, you name it. And, 20 millimeter cannon on the front. But the thing was, it did not have a speck of dust on it. Okay. Yeah. So it had been towed there, within the last 24 hours. And I found out later from a source that yes, the Iraqis were doing that to keep trying to hide, their expensive frontline fighters, from being blown to bits. Well, okay, gee, that happens, especially in a dubious place like Iraq, that has our weaponry, as the listeners have been informed, that I found the only weapons of mass destruction located in Iraq, which was the VX gas. But also this, and I've never said this to your listeners, Steve, by the way, everybody seemed in the village, they seemed friendly, everybody was pleasant, and so we got out, examined this MiG-29, and it was beautiful shape. Like I say, just like it had been kept inside in a hangar for the last, up until the last 24 hours before. And so, okay, we made note of it, and we filed our reports, and we went back, and we came back 2 days later, and I noticed that there was a real sense of doom and gloom about the village. I mean, nobody wanted to even look out the windows. Like they had come out and actually waved to us and greeted us before, and nobody was saying anything. And I found out why. And we came around the mud brick wall, the same mud brick wall, and there was the MiG-29, or should I say, the remains of the MiG-29. And until I'd seen it, Bill, I wouldn't have believed that anything could happen like this. And something happened a couple weeks later too, comparable. That MiG-29, it wasn't blown up, alright? It hadn't been hit by any kind of missile or conventional explosive. It was melted, Bill, okay? It was melted. I mean, the canopy had gotten so hot, the fighter canopy had gotten so hot that it actually flowed like a river down onto the ground. The metal had melted off the wings. The only metal left that was sort of intact was the engine, which was a titanium block, okay? Titanium seemed to have held up, okay? But the wiring was completely burned off. The tires were completely burned off, but nothing was exploded. It wasn't fractured. Everything was melted. The rocket systems, the missile systems on board were completely melted. It melted off into a, like a large metallic pool, okay, just about 10 feet away from the fighter. And it turned into this smooth, molten pool of metal, all right? Now, and the other situation, and you can think about that for a moment.
Well, I already know the cause of this. I watched them experiment with this system at Eglin Air Force Base 8 months prior to the move on Iraq. And remember the Humvees that had the dishes on it?
The Humvees that had what? I'm sorry?
Had dishes on it. Had
radar
dishes.
Right.
They had situated some 2,000 of those at Eglin Air Force Base, all faced at one dish, one big, big reflective dish.
Okay.
So they all fed into that dish, And the result was what wherever that ditch focalized on was a target. And they plane after plane, they experiment and experiment. In fact, the carcasses are still on Eglin Air Force Base. You can go on Google Earth and search down on the air proving grounds at Eglin, and you can find these birds that were in the path. The dish is still standing there, the experimental dish that they were working with. But what it turned out to be was these units that they sent forward into Iraq all had these dishes on them. They also had amplifiers on them to amplify the equipment that they were running normally. They had a power amplifier in there that took it up to almost a half a megawatt of power, half a megawatt of this so-called defensive screen that they could put up, this so-called sonic burning wall that could dispense with crowd control and stuff like that. You know what I'm talking about. And here's another thing. If you look around on the ground during 9/11, guess what you will start to see? You will see cars that were burnt in the same manner, same manner that you're talking about. The aluminum blocks, mainly anything that was aluminum, was just melted. And the paint, anything that contained aluminum paint, or bits of aluminum, just burnt.
Now, we'll get back to 9/11, because you just solved a big mystery that I had in my mind. Okay, and I didn't quite know how to write it up on my intelligence reports. But like I said, you know, now this thing was actually sitting kind of, it wasn't in a courtyard, but it was, it had pretty much a protection of mud brick walls on three sides, and which was, that's why they told it there to, you know, be protected. But it looked like this thing was hit from above. Okay, but, you know, I'm only guessing, but it looked like whatever, you know, did this to this MiG-29 was actually from above, up above it, and then did it point straight down. All right, so does that sound like that was possible? You know, you're describing everything that is possible now, but does that sound like that was possible? Because I didn't see, you know, really any place, you know, for a land-based, you know, concentration of focal point, on this fighter. It looked like it came from above. Okay, like a helicopter, or, you know, some big, like a C-130 platform or something like that. But that's what I thought, is that came from directly above, you know, and like I say, everything was melted except for the engine, and, you know, the two engines that they had, so, which were titanium. But everything else was gone, okay, gone completely. But truly amazing. Now, does that sound like it would have been airborne, or just ground-based?
Well, I've lost Billy. Trying to get it. Oh, are you back now, Billy?
I don't know. Am I back yet?
Yes, you are. You're back.
I was working for a company called the Bronx, and we were always embedded in these companies, registered companies, to work with them on projects that were involved with the company. And the Bronx is the people who did the modifications on the antenna on top of towers some 6 to 8 prior to the incident. And I will tell you that everything that was upon that antenna was not there the day we signed off when we did our checklist, our run-through. Everything we did up there was moved. For instance, there was where we put in 10-inch transmission lines for the antenna had been replaced by some 28-inch tubing that contained liquid of some sort. But as when we were up on top of the building, putting up the equipment that we were putting up there, 6 weeks, well, actually 8 weeks prior, we signed off 6 weeks later. But when we were up there, we all took note that every dish, every satellite dish, every microwave dish that we could see out beyond the tower's building was all faced to the tower's building. We're all faced at the tower's building. Every satellite dish, everything you could think of that had a concave dish, whether it be for satellite reception, whether it be for microwave, whatever, was all faced towards that building.
Well, okay, so you're saying 9/11 and all the molten metal that hundreds of witnesses saw, okay, flowing down, you know, the internal framework, the 74 girders, 77 girders that were on those, you know, the part of the made up each one of those towers, and those girders were, of course, the strongest steel known, and rated as the strongest steel known. That the flowing metal probably came from the same system melted this MiG-29. Is that a safe thing to say?
That is a very safe thing to say. Because
okay.
these units are tunable. Understand, they use very selective high frequencies. I mean, very narrow band. I mean, you can't hit, it's such a narrow band, you can't make any decipher of information on it. It's so narrow.
Mm-hmm.
But the impulse, even though it's very short pulsed, the magnitude of that pulse is so great that when you envelop it with another signal on top of that signal, on top of that signal, the concurrent result is a stacking of power that is resonant to certain items, certain frequencies.
So you're kind of creating kind of like a laser effect with frequencies then.
Exactly.
Yeah,
You're making a tune resonant frequency of certain items. Any item that is of that certain length or of that component. You understand, every material has a resonant frequency.
Say, Billy.
Yes, go ahead.
I got a question for
you. Now, the last thing, and this kind of fits right in with what you're saying, it is one of the great mysteries that I had, besides the MiG-29. A few days later, I was out looking, I was doing what's called a dock-in. You know, I was looking for, you know, in buildings and Balad Air Base, and I had not found the VX gas, by the way, the WMB gas, but I was looking in buildings that were on the outer edge of Balad Air Base, which is the big air base, which we took over, of course, and
very familiar.
And it was, right, okay. And they call it Anaconda, you know, now, but, or Mortarville now, but needless to say, I saw there was a beautiful pond, okay, and, you know, and it was full of, you know, wild ducks and so forth, and that's something extremely rare out in the middle of the desert, but this beautiful pond, and so I walked over and just out of curiosity, you know, what's this beautiful, gorgeous pond, you know, doing out here, and I noticed, you know, I walked into it, there was a truck, and it was I'll give you the exact designation, which you can probably appreciate, it was a Russian BTR-152, all right? And it was a radio transmitting truck. Okay, it was configured for radio transmission. And
it was a Comco.
It was a who? I'm sorry.
It's a Comco, composite.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
You're correct. And so anyway, but I walked up and it looked like it was all right from a distance. You know, 100 meters away, it looked just fine. But I walked over to it and I could see it was the same exact situation. With the fighter, okay. The frame was just fine, but the whole truck from the metallic cover and roof had melted, and there were banks of glass tubes, okay. You know, the old TV tubes that, you know, I grew up with. You know, you probably did too, Bill. Steve, I don't know. Okay.
Yes.
You know,
I did actually. Yes, Greg. Okay. I did.
You know.
Yeah, we're old tubers.
I remember my dad having to take the whole shopping bag full every time the TV went on a fritz and going over to the supermarket and standing in front of a tester and testing each one by hand. Okay, but each, you know, if these were Russian tubes, gas tubes, and they were actually melted. Okay, they were melted, and everything had flown in a really pure looking stream of metal and glass. And truck seats, and I mean, if there were people in there, you know, they were probably just part of the ash in the front seat, okay, which was melted right down to the floorboard. Tires were gone, everything, you know, it hadn't been blown up. That's why it looked like it was okay from a distance, all right, just like the MiG. It had not been fractured, you know, it hadn't been hit by anything with HE or anything like that. No, it was fine 1 minute, and somebody turned something on it, and there was a pool of metal about 30 yards across, you know, and it was, I tapped it with my toe, and of course it was solid, but the thing was, there wasn't a ripple on this metal. It looked like water, when water has tension on it, and it smooths over flat, and everybody's seen it that's listening to this, and that's where the metal looked. It looked like it had actually had a certain tension on it and caused it to be flat, but with a certain vibratory appearance.
Had that ripple on the top as it cooled?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, you're the only person that's ever said anything about this, or even said, yes, that's probably what it is. And you're just describing what that pool of metal looked like, okay? It definitely had a ripple on it. you know, as if some sort of vibration, okay? But, you know, that was way beyond me. You know, like I said, I'm just a humble civil servant out there, you know, trying to do my reserve time and get out and retire, you know. And when I saw that, I thought, uh-oh, okay, that and the MiG. Now, once can be a coincidence, which very seldom happens in intelligence work. Twice, no way. All right. So
Greg,
something was out there.
Well,
Greg,
let me bring up something else that happened over in Iraq that you may have taken note of. Remember when we first made entry into Iraq going across the desert, and all of a sudden all these troops, these Iraqi troops started coming out dazed, bewildered.
Giving themselves
crazed,
up, yeah. Giving themselves
like,
up, yep.
Like they'd been hypnotized or how would you describe it? Their brains weren't there.
They were terrified, weren't they, Billy?
They were confused.
Yeah.
They were totally confused.
That was more what I saw, just like, you know, what is happening here? And then I remember running up to us and very clear that they weren't a threat. Okay. Everybody's already, you know, at the highest level of operation fitness. You know, when you're in that situation, you're expecting to be either shot at, blown up, you know, some sort of attack. And there was none. They were just pretty helpless, like they'd been totally broken. Okay. Totally broken, you know, in mind and spirit.
And I don't know whether you ran into it or not, but I had the fellas come back and tell me about, without ever seeing a shot fired or a fire going on, they came across bodies that were just burnt and mangled, was just cut in half, where they, had their, ammunition, wrapped around them. They were just cut in half.
Okay.
And it just so happens, you know, there was electronics moved into the area prior to the advancement. You remember that? Remember the in Kuwait there was a suspicious explosion by some foreign GI that tried to blow up half a camp. Remember that?
Well, I remember they said that was a personal grudge that he had, and he threw a couple of grenades into his commanding officer's tent. Okay, I remember that, and they actually court-martialed this kid and sent him to Leavenworth over that. I remember that very clearly.
Well, what they didn't tell us was that half the ammo dump there blew up, too.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, good. You're just the person I want to talk to, Bill. Okay, how much more time do we have, Steve? Steve, how much more time do we have?
I got to go in 15 minutes, okay?
Okay. Here, I'll make this quick, Bill. Okay. We were in Balad, and we'd gotten word that Chemical Ali, all right, for all your listeners, Chemical Ali was the cousin of Saddam Hussein, and Chemical Ali released the VX gas on the Kurds and the Iranians, all right? Well, we were supposedly tracking Chemical Ali, and there were all kinds of rumors that, yes, he had been captured, and then all of a sudden, no, he wasn't captured. And so we had a report and that he was in some of his private business, which was just below Balad, to the south of Balad. And so we were told, hey, show up, get there quick because he's there, and we can capture Chemical Ali, all right? So we were going as fast as Humvees go, which isn't very fast, by the way, and about 50, 55 down the, you know, A1A, you know, the highway, you know, the road to Samarra there. And I looked over, and we were in the lead vehicle, and I noticed two Apaches. We're just kind of fluttering about. This is off to the, let me see, we're going south, so that was to the east. And they were fluttering, they were together, they just didn't look like they were really doing much of anything. And then both of them stopped, they pivoted around, this is about a mile away. And both of them lowered their noses and fired a white arc of light, which I assume was probably a Hellfire missile, like, I guess. Okay, but it was, both of them fired this white arc of light, and you know, Bill and Steve, you know, 3 decades of being in the business, I have never seen the resulting explosion, okay, you know, that resulted from this, okay, from them firing, you know, those two missiles. And both Apaches immediately backed up, okay. They didn't turn around and go. They backed up like they were in an emergency panic situation.
You think
I'm sorry?
You think there were many nukes, many tactical nukes?
Well, I think there was something going on there, okay, and here's why, is they came rushing as fast as they could at us, and they went right over the top of us, no more than 60 feet up above our heads, and then they took off, you know, to the west, And I looked over, and I could see the shockwave rolling across the ground at us. Okay, you know, we were in four vehicles, but the shockwave was so big that it was lifting things on the ground and throwing them up in the air by, you know, like 100 feet up in the air. Didn't matter what it was. And the shockwave hit us, and it knocked us about 6 to maybe 8 feet, you know, from one lane over into the other lane, just picked us up and threw us in the other lane. And of course, everybody was stunned. I mean, to get hit with something like that, you know. And I looked, and there was a mushroom cloud about 5,000 feet high, and it was actually rising up, you know, in a big column of fire, and it was boiling as it went up, and it was actually lifting huge projectiles, like 1,000-pound bombs, 2,000-pound blockbusters, and it was sucking all this munitions up through the center of it, and it was throwing these munitions out the top. And they were flying out of the top, these munitions, 5,000 feet up, and they were spinning through the air and exploding. But it was so far up that 2,000 pounds or 1,000 pounds of munitions wasn't making any noise. It was just, you could see it popping, exploding. And then the explosion proceeded to go rumble to the north, blowing as it went. Okay, it was blowing up about 5,000 feet high, and it went close to 18 miles, okay? And I know that for a reason, all right? And it went 18 miles of explosion, and it blew, the first explosion blew a huge smoke ring, and the second explosion blew another smoke ring. The smoke rings were about maybe 2 miles across, and so we had stopped on the road, you know, because, like I say, we were so shaken up, you know, by this. And I looked, and there was a spotter plane. And a spotter plane was like it expected, you know, expected to be there watching this happen. And it flew right through each smoke ring. Okay, that's how big the smoke rings were. You know, 2 miles across, and it went through. And so we were really shaken up. You know, when you get hit with that much concussion, and so we made it to this little gas station, kind of a car service area where Kim McCauley was supposed to have been. There was nobody there, but, you know, there were people there, but not Kim McCauley. We returned, and there were some government types there. You know, only government types can look like government types. And, you know, with a black wraparound sunglasses and the cheap clothes. And they all handed us a report, and they stood right there while we read the report. And they said that explosion was approximately 18 miles long, okay, and it was 3 miles wide. And they have no idea what caused the explosion, the detonation, but at least 300 to 500 people, mainly Iraqis, had been vaporized, okay, when this thing detonated, had been vaporized. All that was left of them were shoes, all right? And so this thing, and then they, you know, they stood right there, and they took the report back out of our hands, and then we never saw them again. So I don't know if that sounds like something you would know about, but I've always wondered, you know, why the biggest explosion I've ever seen in my life, you know, in 3 decades of government service, you know, what that was, what would make such an, you know, because conventional munitions wouldn't blow up like that. So, well, you know, I don't know. Go ahead, Bill.
While I was at Eglin, one of the things that I did was set up cameras around Eglin on top of towers for when they did the detonation of the MOAB, you know. Remember, mother of all bombs.
Oh, sure, right. Big, heavy.
I was sitting on towers during those procedures at Eglin, and 3 weeks following the last MOAB that was tested there, they tested a system. I had to set up the cameras for a NICS test, which was known as the neutral bomb, and it was. There was no sound to it hardly at all. It was like, and it covered an area of 18 miles.
Uh-oh.
18 miles.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Now, this was prior to 9/11.
Okay.
This was in the first testings of the MOAB, which was dropped out of the back of the C-130, by the way.
Right, but, you have to, right. So, and, crew to survive, don't you have to do it that way, and with a parachute?
Right.
Say,
and
Bill.
They built up 132 of those MOABs, and they all disappeared. Mm-hmm.
Say, Bill?
Yes, sir.
Bottom line, do you think the two towers were brought down by a combination of demolitions and directed energy?
I absolutely do. I don't think it was one thing. I think it was a multiple excursion. It was totally planned. It was a big play. I mean, it was done for dramatics.
Yeah, I think the military-industrial complex had a new toy, and they wanted to show the world what it could do.
And well, here's another thing. There is a 9-second delay between detonations of this neutron, this neutral bomb. There are two separate detonations, which makes two separate rings. So now you put that together with what you just described. You saw an Iraq bingo.
Okay, because there was very clearly a separation between that first initial explosion. No, it looked like a nuclear warhead going off, okay? I've only seen nuclear warheads go off in, you know, in television and in movies and so forth. Yeah,
well,
if you ever seen
a detonation of a MOAB, it too looks like a detonation of a nuclear device. But a neutron bomb works in two separate phases. It disperses a column first of gaseous material. Then it's re-detonated 9 seconds later.
And this is sounding really uncomfortable, Bill. I'll tell you that right now, because you're just pretty much describing what you know we had happen to us on that highway, okay, and what we saw. And those government guys, they came out of nowhere, and they were back with a typed report, before we could return, because it took us about 2 hours to return back to, you know, to Balad there.
Yeah.
And they had that prepared. They had that report prepared.
And for you to sign it.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
You bet.
I went through the same thing. You know, since I saw it, I had to sign a report at Eglin Air Force Base saying I visibly saw this and blah, 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 blah. And I mean, it was like before I could come off that tower and come down to the ground, each time I had to sign off on it.
Okay. That sounds about right. Steve, where'd you find this guy?
He called.
Can we get him back for another show?
Yes, we can, if he wants to come back.
Well, just look. Yes. You can Google my name. Everybody knows me. I'm the harp guy.
Okay.
I'm the chemtrail guy. I'm the harp guy, because people don't understand. You know, these chemtrails that we talk about today are all part of that original Agent Orange system. It's been going on for a long time. People don't understand. It's just been one experiment after another experiment. Now, each experiment comes 12 new items to experiment with. It's been a toy with these crazy guys for years and years and years and years.
You know, everything you say is hitting, and I almost said earlier, well, you know, do you believe in the chemtrails? All right. And here they are. You actually do understand, you know, what the premise is behind all these things that have been conjectured for years, all right? And to have somebody put all this together, especially for me with what I've seen, you know, in 3 decades of being in unusual places doing unusual things, you know, this is actually a relief, and more than anything, to know that I didn't imagine what I saw and have it happen. By the way, on the towers, and I will make this quick because I know we got to leave, Steve, but, you know, I've seen, you know, lots and lots of demolitions, detonations, and so forth, you know, in my 3 decades. And those towers behaved like they were a controlled demolition.
Yeah, also, okay. Greg, you also got to.
Yes.
Well, you got to realize, too, that concrete just doesn't turn to dust in midair either, and neither does steel.
Well, as Judy Woods puts it, they were dustified.
Dustified. And steel just disappeared in front of our eyes, too.
And the irony is there, you know, I've actually read the transcripts of people that were calling in saying, look, we're looking at the fire from the other buildings, and the fire's out. There's no more problem. You know, hey, everybody's going to make it out okay, all right? And all of a sudden, this buckling, okay, at the top part of the first tower, and it actually buckled. I've never seen a structure like that buckle, just fall over, okay, and which told me something was going on with those girders, okay, those girders, which I say were the finest girders in the world, and there's something that nobody talks about is inside those buildings, there were counterbalance weights set up every other floor to prevent those buildings from rocking in the wind. And so computers detected automatically anything as big as a 747 strike into that building and adjusted those counterbalance weights. All right.
Exactly.
So all of a sudden, you know, those buildings were acting like they had no control, and they had always been computer-controlled buildings. You know, like, say, there was this, you know, the wind sway, and they were designed for a 747, which was much bigger plane than what hit those towers. And then to see that one tower buckle over like it was, you know, like it had heat, like it was a heat-induced, you know, rupture in the structure itself. And I've always wondered about that, and this makes perfect sense. Now what you're saying, Bill, this makes perfect sense, why that first tower behaved the way it did, and then to have the second tower, you know, fall the way it did, you know, and have all the reports from all the firemen saying, no way, no how, you know, we saw rivers of metal flowing down those girders. It actually filled up the basement. Okay, it filled up the basement of both buildings, you know, the flowing metal. That, yes, something else was there to bring those buildings down. Okay, they would not have fallen on their own, in their own footprint. And that's the whole key to this, is they fell within their own footprint, all right?
Yeah.
They didn't topple, you know, they didn't, you know, do anything.
Yeah.
Like, they,
and Greg, yeah, that basement you're referring to, they called the bathtub, too. And it was, it wasn't all that thick of a structure that held the bottom of the towers, or the that was the concrete, you know, the structures went down in through the bathtub, as they called it,
but
it wasn't all that thick.
That same bathtub acted as a electronic grounding base for all electronics too. Keep that in mind.
Sure, exactly.
At a tuned distance of 7,285 feet.
Yes, we're definitely going to have to get you back on again, Billy, next time.
Absolutely.
Greg comes up.
Great. Yeah. Now, Bill, have you heard about my briefing? It was done by a Colonel Anthony Schaefer, Tony Schaefer. If you ever watch Fox News, you'll see him on there.
Yeah.
He gave our intelligence group a briefing, and it turned out to be 14 months before, and he said, these buildings are going to be struck, all right? There's planes that are going to be hijacked, and they're going to be flown into those buildings, all right? And so I told the poor listeners of Steve's show many times, this is what happened. We knew about this. I mean, we were informed to go home, get our affairs in order, get our will in order, because we would be, you know, responding and organizing because of this attack, okay? And they said, okay, let me see. The targets were the World Trade Center and also select targets, as I told the listeners many times now, select targets around the Washington, D.C. area, all right? And so, as a result, it was 14 months almost to the day from when I was given that briefing. Okay. And it couldn't have been more of a turnkey operation than it was. So I've always wondered about that. There are no coincidences in intelligence work, period. There are none. Okay. And that proves it. And Bill, I would like to say that this has been, you know, for me to acknowledge that somebody can enlighten me, that's quite an honor, and I greatly appreciate, you know, you coming on the show and not only filling me, giving us the, you know, the wherewithal on the White House boys and what happened there, but also how that led into MKUltra, which I'm constantly asked questions about, and then the issue of HAARP. I didn't know it. I've never met anybody, you know, that actually knew something about HAARP, but you know it. So you are the guy, and please come back on the show. Please. I'd love to engage you more, and hopefully the listeners find this interesting, too, on your show, Steve.
Yes, they do. And I do, too.
Okay. Well, I apologize, guys. I came in here to talk about Dozier Boys Reform School.
Don't be sorry.
I'm sorry I took you guys off topic.
Don't be.
Please beg my forgiveness.
Don't be, Billy.
We'll call this a retroactive interview. Okay. Well, all right. What do you think, Steve? Is this a retroactive interview for the
Yes,
listeners?
It is. A audition of sorts. Although it sounds like he's been on other shows before.
Yeah, I have. I don't know about him.
Oh, yes, Greg has. But all right, guys. Well, yeah.
Only thing you have to do is just go up Billy Hayes, HAARP, and you'll get the answers. Nick Baggage is a relative of mine.
Well, that explains a lot right there.
Well, he's married into the family. Just, you know.
Right.
Uh, you know how sucking cousins are.
Right.
But his dad and my dad met their demise on the same exact day.
Oh.
They were friends with each other. They talked with each other two or three times every week prior to their demise. And my dad was part of the original HARP, which was Mr. Bull was the head of that. That was a super gun. Remember the super gun that was in Iraq? Well,
yes, Jonathan Bull, the Canadian scientist who put that together, and who was removed from the arms business by Israeli Mossad. Yes, exactly. I'm familiar with the super gun. Yes.
Well, I was invited to go over there and work with him, and my wife put a stop to that in a hurry. And of course, it's good that she did because I was supposed to do all the electronics for that, and I got out of it.
Yeah.
Well, Gerald Bull knew what he was doing, but what's always amazed me, Bill, is why didn't they just pay him for his technology instead of just
let me bring this up. Most people don't realize this, but during the first test of the so-called super gun that they took up to Alaska out on the Aleutian Islands on Whiskey Bay up there. The last time they did any testing, something went awry with electronics. And it was on that day that everything went awry. There was a tidal surge that came across the Aleutian Islands. And this was 1963. And it just turned out to be the biggest earthquake ever to hit Alaska.
Alaska, yeah. 9.4 or something like that, yeah.
Right.
And Anchorage.
And everything, everything in reference to HARP disappeared on that date.
Wow, yeah. The maybe that was a precursor of H-A-R. Is it two A's or two R's?
Two A's.
Two A's, H-A-A-R-P, yeah. But
the first one was single A, and the second was double A.
Yeah,
my dad was with the first A.
Yeah.
And I worked the second A.
Yeah. I really do got to go, guys. I got another show in 10 minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, all right, Steve. Well, hey, it was a pleasure, Bill. And Steve, thanks again for having me.
Yeah,
next time, let's talk about Syria and Ukraine.
There you go.
What's going on?
There you go.
I'd love to hear Bill's take on it, too.
Yeah, I would, too. I'll be in contact with you there, Billy. Is that all right?
Sure. Just anytime.
Okay. All right, everyone. I do have to go. Sure.
Okay. Well,
you're still on the air.
I know I am. That's why.
And as they're saying in Russia now, do svidaniya, okay? And they're going to be saying that in Ukraine very shortly, too.
Yes, they will.
So, anyway, it was a pleasure. Okay, we'll talk, guys. Thank you.
Do svidaniya.
Thanks, guys. Thanks a lot. All right, everyone. I'll see everyone next Sunday. New guest. Don't know what's going to go on, but I will have a show next Sunday. So thanks, everyone, at Revolution Radio. I'm Stephen Roberts. This has been Cancel the Cabal. Good night, everyone.